Hello, my name is Stacy, and I'm happy to welcome you back to another edition of the Angus Talking Newspaper, your audio source for local news, stories, and updates from across the Angus area. In this edition, we'll be sharing a variety of news, community stories, and features to keep you informed and connected from February 20th, which is read by Gwen, February 27th, which is read by Leslie, and March 3rd, read by our newest reader, Fiona. There will also be a fun general knowledge quiz section read by Anne from TNF Soundings. For those of you listening in via USB, we have added a heartwarming history of guide dogs, an article written by Fiona and read by Nikki from TNF Soundings. We hope you enjoy this selection we've prepared, and as always, thank you for listening. Let's get started.
Hello, this is Gwen McIntosh, reading for you today from Angus County Press, Thursday, February 20th, 2025. Go Ahead for Solar Scheme by Liam Rutherford. Plans for a new Arbroath solar and battery storage scheme have been given the green light by council planning chiefs. The Denfield Farm project involves a 12.5 MW solar array and 7 MW battery storage development. It will sit beside the road leading to Millfield and is around a mile west of the 45 Commando Royal Marines base at RM Condor. Farmer Peter Stirling is behind the plans. He first submitted an application to Angus Council in September 2023, but this was later withdrawn after it drew a number of objections. A revised plan was then lodged with local authority, which Mr. Stirling said carefully considered and reflected the concerns put forward by residents. Despite this, the new application still attracted 20 objections. The application was considered at a recent Development Standards Committee meeting, but councillors were split on the development and Brechin representative Gavin Nicol led calls to block the bid, saying it would have a detrimental impact on the area and its residents. SNP councillor Lloyd Melville added, "My record on this committee has been fairly pro-solar development. However, my policy has been it has to be in the right place and with the right mitigations in place. The questions other members and I have asked are specific and particular on the management of contaminants and hazardous materials in the batteries themselves. I'm not remotely convinced." Despite the concerns raised, the development was voted through by 8-4. Looking for Lifeguards by Mark Dowie. The RNLI Lifeguards Scotland team are recruiting focused and dedicated individuals eager to add Lifesaver to their CV this summer. The charity is looking for enthusiastic individuals for a unique opportunity to make a difference, helping to ensure the water is safe for people to enjoy. With world-class RNLI training and plenty of development opportunities available, successful applicants will be able to build valuable skills working under pressure in a challenging but incredibly rewarding role. These skills in teamwork, leadership, and problem-solving areas are easily transferred into other job roles, especially within the emergency services. Focused, vigilant, proactive and approachable, RNLI lifeguards can complete a 400-metre pool swim in under 7.5 minutes, the first 200 metres of which must be completed in under 3.5 minutes. Lifeguards must also have the ability to complete a 200-metre beach run in under 40 seconds. Applicants must also hold a National Vocational Beach Lifeguard Qualification, NVBLQ, or equivalent, or ILS Beach Surf Lifeguard Qualification, or equivalent. While operating nationwide, currently in the Northeast, the lifeguard service covers Broughty Ferry Beach and several in Fife. Lee Fisher, lifeguard experience manager, said, "Beach lifeguarding is a great opportunity and a very rewarding role that changes lives, including your own. Our lifeguards range from teenagers all the way up to lifesavers in their 70s. As long as you meet the fitness requirements and you're over 16, there could be a role for you. The job also has great paths for progression. We have lifeguards who have been working for the RNLI for years, both on the beach and as part of our support teams, and the skills you gain can make an ideal first step towards many careers. It's a great opportunity whether you want a rewarding summer job or to pursue a career in life saving. Further information can be found on the lifesavingjobs.rnli.org website. More than £760,000 for Play Park. Angus South MSP Graham Day has welcomed new figures which reveal £769,000 has so far been invested to improve play parks in Angus, including Freecombe Park and Spink Street Play Area in Arbroath. The Scottish Government has provided £35 million to renew or improve play parks since May 2021, £15 million in 2024-25 alone. A total of 887 play parks have been renewed or were being renewed in Scotland up to April 2024. This investment is ensuring children across the country have safe places to play in their local community and is an important priority for First Minister John Swinney's government, supporting his mission to improve the lives of children across Scotland. In January 2024, SNP-led Angus Council approved a total spend of over £1 million from the Scottish Government's capital funding for play parks for financial years 23-24 to 25-26. This will allow the local authority to scale up the number of play parks it is improving with Scottish Government funding, including at Crombie Country Park, the Blue Seaway in Monifieth and Kearney Crescent in Arbroath. Mr Day said the SNP was right to commit improving play parks for children across Scotland, and I'm pleased to see Angus reap the benefits of this investment. MP praises centre's work by Mark Dowie. Arbroath and Broughty Ferry MP Stephen Gethins recently dropped into the Angus Carers Centre in Arbroath to learn more about the vital support available to carers across the county. During his visit, Mr Gethins met with both the adult and young carer teams to discuss the challenges faced by their clients. Led by Chief Executive Officer Jill Bain, the teams highlighted the crucial role carers play in supporting loved ones, as well as the continuing need for greater recognition, respite and assistance. Mr Gethins expressed his admiration for the dedication of carers in the community and reaffirmed his commitment to supporting them in the future. He said carers provide an invaluable service to their families and our communities, often without the recognition they deserve. The work of Angus Carers Centre is vital in ensuring carers receive some of the guidance and resources they need. He expressed gratitude for the chance to hear directly from carers about the support provided, and with particular regard for those giving care whilst still very young. Ms Bain added, "It was great to welcome Stephen to the centre and to see him have such an interest in the challenges that our unpaid carers face." Both adult and young carers teams were keen to share the work and support that is carried out for unpaid carers in Angus. Plea to Keep Libraries by Mark Dowie. Angus Council has been asked to continue investing in the county's libraries as it sets its budget priorities for the next year. Alison Nolan, Chief Executive Officer of the Scottish Library and Information Council, SLIC, has written to the local authority to emphasise the important roles libraries can have in their communities. Over the past decade, 53 libraries across Scotland have closed for good. Ms Nolan has pointed out that libraries provide essential access to trusted information and education for all, encourage a lifelong love of reading, and serve as warm spaces where everyone is welcome without any expectation to spend. She said, "I've written to councillors across Angus before crucial budget decisions are made for the next financial year to remind them what investment in public libraries truly means. At the SLIC, we understand the delicate financial situation that councils must navigate, but we would urge those considering cuts to their library services to think again. It's no secret that the cultural sector is under unprecedented pressure, but the narrative that austerity measures justify these cuts is short-sighted. This isn't just a story of diminishing buildings and bookshelves. It's a story of lives disrupted. These closures are deeply felt because libraries represent so much more than the sum of their parts. Public libraries remain the most popular service local government delivers. Closing these doors means cutting off opportunities, a cost far greater than any savings achieved. Ms. Nolan added that closures and cuts disproportionately affect rural communities, removing vital access to education, digital resources, and safe spaces for social interaction. She said, "They provide essential services to support job applications, digital literacy training, and social connection. To lose them is to deepen the isolation already felt by many. No other community asset can deliver the vast benefits that a thriving library service can. And so we would urge decision makers to prioritise investment in their communities. Anything less would be a failure we cannot afford." New CEO for ESP Group. The ESP Group has announced the appointment of Ashley Meston as the company's new Chief Executive Officer. Ms. Meston's appointment comes as part of a planned progression, with former CEO Teresa Lawson continuing to play a supporting role as board chairpersons. Her career with ESP Group, which has an office in Arbroath, spans 18 years, starting as a customer service advisor and progressing through several leadership roles. She said, "Teresa has been an incredible leader, mentor and friend. I'm honoured to take on this role and to continue building on the fantastic foundation she has created. With the amazing teams we have in place, I look forward to helping the business grow." Concert lived up to expectations. The eagerly anticipated annual Tayside Symphony Orchestra February concert was held in Forfar mid-month. Conducted by Richard Allen and led by Christine Mollison, the event lived up to the high expectations of the audience. More than 50 players were on stage in the Reed Hall, and the sound was excellent. This year the theme for the programme was Happy Music, with the choice ranging from a Beatles medley to dances including polkas, waltzes and the can-can, and film scores including Gabriel's Oboe and Colonel Bogey. The wide variety of styles and genres of music meant that the evening featured something for everyone to enjoy. How enthusiastically the audience engaged with the audience participation led by the conductor in some of the pieces was a notable feature. There were many splendid orchestrations, some leaning heavily on brass and woodwind, and others giving the strings their chance to shine. The medleys also tested the ability of the percussion section as the players swapped roles with admirable fluidity and the minimum of fuss. What's Up at the Symphony got the concert off to a flying start. Other well-known pieces included The Entertainer, The Waltzing Cat, Those Magnificent Men, The Mexican Hat Dance, and 76 Trombones. The encore of Obladi Oblada sent the audience homeward bound, humming many memorable memories. An evening of sheer pleasure and delight was warmly endorsed by the applause registering "Well done" to all musicians. First Garden open for new season. This year will be a busy one for Scotland's garden scheme in Angus, Dundee and South Kincardineshire, with 35 openings scheduled, some of them of multiple gardens. First to welcome visitors was the beautiful Snowdrop collection at Kinblethmont House by Arbroath. Kinblethmont is an historic estate which has been settled since Pictish times. In the centre is the Victorian mansion, surrounded by beautiful policy woodlands where specimen trees and snowdrops abound. Paths took visitors through the woods to the walled garden or around the solar park with spectacular views over to the Angus Hills and the North Sea. dogs were welcome on leads. The benefiting charities were the Freakham Hub and SGS Charities, Maggie's, Perennial and QNIS. New portal opens up more of county's history online by Mark Dowie. Angus's history and heritage can now be accessed on a new online resource which has been launched by Historic Environment Scotland, HES. The digital portal trove.scot brings together HES's unique and diverse collections of information in one convenient place. From standing stones to skate parks, Trove.scot contains over 5,000 years of Scotland's history in approximately 3 million records, combining designation records of Scotland's most important historic sites and buildings, the Catalogue of Scotland's Archaeology and Built Heritage, over 2,000 culturally significant objects from HES's properties and educational and archival images and media from Scran. On Trove.scot, users can explore Angus and Dundee's rich historic environment and learn about the first Tay Bridge and the tragedy of its collapse in 1879, take a step back in time and stroll down Victoria Road alongside Dundonians from 1875, or explore HES's properties and care and the gems they contain, such as the 8 16th century carved oak panels on display at Edsel Castle. This wealth of information is now more accessible than ever before, providing an exciting new resource for hobbyists, educators, historians and heritage professionals alike. Refusal for Angus XL Bully Sanctuary by Liam Rutherford. Angus councillors have refused to grant Scotland's first XL Bully Sanctuary's application for a licence to operate. The controversial bid to host up to 31 bulldog breed dogs at the Hapas Canine Centre near Forfar first emerged last year. Kerry Ann Shaw, the campaigner behind the scheme, moved to Angus from Glasgow after raising more than £20,000 for the project. Ms Shaw is the chairperson of charity All Bully Charity Rescue. However, councillors unanimously refused their application for a licence at a meeting of the council's Civic Licensing Committee. This comes after two inspections have been carried out at the sanctuary, both of which heavily criticised the management and condition of the facility. Angus Council's Animal Welfare Inspector, Corinne Hill, warned she did not believe Ms Shaw could safely manage up to 25 dogs at Hapas. But Jacob Cohen, Ms Shaw's legal representative, said his client had made significant progress towards fulfilling the requirements for a licence. Councillors were also asked to take Ms Shaw's ADHD into account, which was said to be a contributing factor in her difficulty in satisfying the conditions of the licence. It was also revealed that two volunteers have begun induction training to help support the animals under the facility's care. However, despite these pleas, councillors said they had grave concerns over the rate of improvements made at the centre. The necessary improvements simply have not happened, said Monifeet representative Lloyd Melville. New Links event by Martin Dempster. Carnoustie Golf Links is to create history later this year by hosting its own World Amateur Golf Ranking, WAGR, event for the first time. This landmark event aims to strengthen the Scottish women's golfing calendar and provide a platform to compete at one of the world's most iconic venues. The Ladies Northern Open 54-hole championship will take place on June 21st and 22nd, with play on both the Budden and Championship courses. The event is designed to attract the best women amateur golfers from across Scotland and the UK, offering a prestigious opportunity to showcase their skills. Keir McNichol, the Carnoustie Golf Links PGA head professional, said, "We are thrilled to launch this new event. It has taken several years of planning to bring it to fruition, and we are proud to offer a competitive platform for the best women amateur golfers." We have received tremendous support from Claire Queen and Tony Finch at Scottish Golf in securing a place for the event in the calendar, and we hope it will inspire more top venues in Scotland to host similar tournaments. In addition to the new event, the traditional 18-hole Ladies Northern Open, a long-standing tournament dating back to 1928, will still take place on the championship course on 21st June. McNichol added, "At Carnoustie, we are passionate about promoting golf at every level, from grassroots to elite, and the addition of a WAGR event is something we are immensely proud of. With our legacy of producing top amateur golfers, we hope this will also be a catalyst for the next generation of golfers." Entries for both events have now opened, and players can register at carnoustiegolflinks.com, with the deadline for entries being 21st May.
Hello, this is Leslie reading for the Angus County Press, Thursday, February 27th. And the front page news is Budget D-Day for Council. The leader of Angus Council has remained tight-lipped on possible council tax rises ahead of today's budget meeting. Before the meeting, Administrative Chief Bill Duff revealed that the budget proposals for 2025-26 fiscal year. The whole local authority is looking to plug an £11.7 million shortfall. During this week's briefing, Councillor Duff set out a range of measures the ruling SNP administration plans to bring in. He had previously warned residents could face a double-digit hike in council tax in order to balance the books, but he refused to be drawn on how much the increase could be. The leader said, "What I will say is the increase will be we propose is well judged and we can get it. The SNP administration will pledge £5 million worth of support to areas including school transport, looked after children and road maintenance. The budget proposals being put forward also include ending town centre parking charges, restoring the general waste skip to Brechin recycling site, support for Angus Alive by reintroducing previously planned in their management fee from £500,000 to £250,000, rejoining Angus and Dundee Chamber of Commerce to help boost economic well-being, additional support for community councils to assist volunteers. Increases of around 5% are also proposed for a number of council charges. This includes school meals, which could rise by 10 pence. The annual green bin fee for disposing of domestic garden waste will rise to £52.50. The SNP administration will present their full spread of budget proposals, including that for the council tax, at a special meeting in Forfar's Town and County Hall this afternoon, where the local authorities' other political groups will also have the opportunity to set out their own alternative budget ideas. Second item, struggling to be heard. Scottish ministers had 9 private meetings with the people behind the planned Kintore to Teeling mega pylon route last year, the Scottish Conservatives have revealed. This comes as campaigners struggle to be heard, that's in quotation marks, over the planned instalment of pylons of up to 75 metres tall across Aberdeenshire and Angus, with associated storage and converters also along the route. Campaigners across the affected part of the country are fighting back against the controversial developments proposed by SSEN. Frustrated campaigners say there has been no engagement with the Scottish Government, despite attempts to have a meeting with Energy Secretary Julian Martin. Meanwhile, ministers attended meetings where SSEN were present 16 times last year, with 9 of these held in private. North East MSP Douglas Lumsden has urged First Minister John Swinney to treat these meetings as a breach of the ministerial code due to prejudicial government policy. The Scottish Conservatives, who obtained the meeting details, say that the community organisations are feeling frozen out of the process. He said, "I've been talking to government community groups across the region from Turriff down to Teeling about their fears the SSEN infrastructure will wreck parts of the countryside and it's being done without their consent. They have all made the point they struggle to be heard by both Scotland's governments. The various consultation events put on by SSEN do little to lessen these fears. We now know Scottish ministers are meeting with the people behind the pylons more than once a week, and most of these meetings are private. It's also a fact Julian Martin hasn't met any of the 20 community councils and campaign organisations along the North East route. Meanwhile, Keir Starmer has said they will be ignored after Labour's calamitous destruction of the planning process. Save Our Mayans member Kate Matthews said the whole thing is a mockery of local democracy. So there's very strong feelings there. Next item, re-elected as chairman. And Edsel Farmer has been reappointed chairman of the Scottish region of the National Sheep Association, NSA. David Miles was re-elected unopposed at the organisation's recent annual general members meeting held at the Roslin Institute, Edinburgh, and he will embark on his second two-year term. The event took place in conjunction with presentations from SRUC professors on sheep-related research and development, and a tour of the unit and the green sheep facilities. Sheep Selkirk sheep farmer Alec Telfer was also elected to serve as the NSA Scotland vice chairman. Mary Dunlop Bigger was re-elected as treasurer unopposed. Meanwhile, Pamela Nicol from Glen Eila was approved to continue her three-year term as SNSA trustee representing Scotland for a second year. Item five coming up, and this is St. Cyrus snowdrops. And with this item, there's a lovely picture of the snowdrops at St. Cyrus. Lovely wooded area, drifts of snowdrops, and a path running through the centre with sunlight coming through the trees. An extensive collection of snowdrops can be seen in the romantic setting of Ecclesgrave Castle by St. Cyrus. The snowdrop walk with a variety of snowdrops starts at the castle, which is in a stunning position looking towards the east coast. It meanders round the state along woodland paths and the pond, ending in the garden. In the Italian balustrade gardens, there's a 140-foot long herbaceous border, classical statues and stunning topiary with views across St. Cyrus to the sea. Also to be found in the grounds is the ancient well of St. Cyrus. The grounds will be open from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. with admission for £5, and teas will be available. 5. Forfar Witch Trial Spotlight. Forfar Probus members were enthralled at their last meeting by Sean Wilson's account of the Forfar Witch Trials of 1662 to 63. He is an MA graduate in Scottish history from Aberdeen University, a historian, researcher and visitor assistant at Forfar's Museum for 2 years. And during his studies, he became interested in his hometown's witch trials and researched this period of persecution of mainly Catholic women in the reign of James VI. Sean described the fate of some of the 48 women and 3 men accused of destroying crops, harming livestock and cursing and killing people. Some were branded and some exiled. The first of the 6 or so to die was 18-year-old Giselle Simpson, who was hanged from the tollbooth window. And there were many questions before Neil Valentine gave a vote of thanks. And there's a picture of Sean, Bob Kidd, the president, and Neil Valentine, who gave the vote of thanks. And Arbroath Probus Club AGM. Members of Arbroath Probus Club held their annual general meeting recently at the Royal British Legion Function Suite. Those attended are, there's a picture of those attending, and the outgoing chairman, Bruce Curry, shook hands with the new chairman, Dr. Cedric de Voyle. The club was formed 43 years ago and new members are always welcome. Members meet every second Tuesday in the Legion, and the next meeting will be on the 4th of March when Dr. de Voyle will talk about his time in West Africa from 1969 to 71, when he and his wife Katrina spent time in Sierra Leone with VSO, voluntary service overseas. A life in the decorating trade. President Mary Ogilvy welcomed Inverkeela WRI members to their recent meeting and introduced guest speaker Bruce Middleton. Bruce gave a humorous talk on his early life in the Inverkeela area and his trade as a painter and decorator. Diane Parry proposed the vote of thanks. Next item is Enterprise raises cash for charity. Pupils at Rosemount Primary School near Montrose recently raised £420 for charity from a recent Enterprise project. They worked together in teams to research, design and make goodies to sell at their Christmas fair, which not only helped them to develop entrepreneurial skills but also learn the importance of teamwork, problem solving and leadership. The class were given a budget for materials and they worked out costs and possible profit, and the pupils also took on the roles of designers, advertisers, quality control and retailers. The project culminated in groups of pupils choosing a charity to receive the money raised and presenting their chosen charity to the class. Molly Fox and Abigail Westwood presented the cheque to Scottish Cot Death Trust. The class voted for that the £420 raised will be split between that and Cancer Research UK. And there's a picture of the whole class presenting their cheque and looking very pleased and happy with themselves. Quite rightly so. Week offers insight into apprenticeships. Pupils across Angus will get a real-life insight into apprenticeships at the start of next month when Scottish Apprenticeship Week will get underway. The week from March 3rd to the 7th is a celebration of the benefits of apprenticeships to business, people and economy, and it's coordinated by Skills Development Scotland with support from the Scottish Government and a range of partners. Education Scotland, E.S. Goyle and SDS are working together to deliver a series of online sessions for pupils, featuring apprentices from across a range of industries. Local schools can log on to the DYW Live website to hear directly from the apprentices on what it's like to work in engineering, green industries, construction, STEM, hospitality and tourism. A free online webinar for parents and carers will explain Scottish apprenticeships and where to find one, with an employer learning and provider apprentices and sharing information on the support provided. The campaign events calendar on apprenticeships, Scott, lists activities that have been registered in the area so far with details on how to sign up. St. Cyrus Beach included in guide. St. Cyrus Beach has featured on a list of wellness travel destinations compiled by National Tourism Agency Visit Scotland. New research into travel trends carried out by the organisation has identified wellness travel as one of the leading trends for 2025, highlighting experiences that enhance both physical and mental well-being. Complementing this, there have been a significant increase in searches that indicate people are seeking to nurture not only the mind and body, but also the soul. In response, Visit Scotland has developed a guide featuring a number of soul-enriching activities, along with where to experience them in Scotland. According to the list, St. Cyrus Beach offers one of the best ways to engage in outdoor therapy. It says, picture yourself strolling along the untouched shores of St. Cyrus Beach in Aberdeenshire, your breath falling into rhythms with the crashing waves. You'll be captivated by the diverse wildlife that thrives in the area, from delicate dunes, flora, to peregrine falcons and fulmars gliding overhead. I know that's a feature from Aberdeenshire, about Aberdeenshire, but I thought as it's so close to where we are in Angus, you would find that of interest. I hope you did. Projects boosting pollinator numbers. Community groups in Angus are in the forefront of efforts to create a nature-friendly spaces and boost population of pollinating insects. Across the county, organisations at local level are transforming parks, hospital grounds and community gardens into nature-friendly spaces to help bees, hoverflies and other pollinating insects. This is according to a new report by Nature Scott. The 7th Pollinator Strategy Progress Report details the work being done by individuals, local authorities, environmental groups, researchers and particularly community groups across the area. In Angus, we are well represented. East Haven Together near Carnoustie has been recognised for its work by last year winning the Gardening for Wildlife Award at last year's RHS Community Awards. The village charity has its own sustainability strategy, which links to local, national and global goals. Community gardens promote the fishing heritage of the village and there's a focus on biodiversity and sustainable practices. In Arbroath, two projects are playing their part, with Hope Organic Garden introducing wildflower beds and borders to their grounds and including a bug hotel built by a local primary school. Urban Pollinator pollinator habitation creation by Cuckton Community Garden introduces yellow rattle seed last year to reduce dominant grasses, and a new cutting regime of once per year and removal of cuttings has been incorporated. The area is part of a community space where residents can interact while engaging with nature. The Shield Street Queen Street Community Garden is a strip of land by a busy footpath to the nature reserve and Esplanade in Broughty Ferry. It has been developed by Grove Academy pupils over a number of years and was the 2024 winner of KSB's Gardening and Youth Awards. The Nine Wells Community Garden is a therapeutic garden in the grounds of Nine Wells Hospital, which is a previous winner of the RHS Community Awards for Gardening. Angus pupils take part in STEM Expo. Hundreds of young learners from 28 schools across Angus and wider Tayside region gathered in Dundee this week to take part in STEM Expo 2025. The event was delivered by Dundee and Angus Regional STEM Partnership and hosted by the MSIP Skills Academy to provide more than 1,000 STU pupils with hands-on opportunities to explore careers in science, technology, engineering and maths. It was designed to build confidence and awareness of the future of STEM careers. The STEM Expo featured a variety of interactive activities. The Dundee and Angus Regional STEM Partnership is committed to creating a regional STEM pathway connecting primary and secondary education with further and higher education institutions as well as industrial partners. And now I'm on to a little bit of sport. Forfar hand themselves a lifeline with Rose win. Forfar Athletic handed themselves a lifeline in their bid to avoid the League Two relegation playoff with a 2-0 win away to fellow strugglers Bonnyrigg Rose. The game before the club welcomed their latest arrival as Danny Denham joined Forfar for a second time, this time on loan from Spartans until the end of the season. Denham started his career in senior football at Station Park as a 21-year-old back in 2012, his excellent form earning him a move to Livingston. The winger would be back at Forfar a year later and went on to make 158 appearances, contributing 41 goals and 21 assists. Denham's last appearance saw him help Forfar to promotion and went on to pick up league winners' medals at Arbroath and Stirling Albion. The 34-year-old PE teacher subsequently spent 3 years at East Fife before joining Spartans in 2022. Angus drivers take part in first Racewell practice day. The opening practice session ahead of the new season took place at Cowdenbeath Racewell on Sunday. The track was wet and greasy, although luckily it stayed mainly dry as drivers got reacquainted with the venue or tried it for the first time. John Hogg from Arbroath and one of his top rivals, Micah Miller, were in the Formula 2 cars. In the end, it was a good day for the Hogg family, with John the fastest on track, while his brother Brian also ran well and was only marginally slower. There aren't too many saloons on show, with Peter Lowe from Forfar and Dennis Midler from Carnoustie among those trying to get the best out of their cars for the conditions. Rhys Anderson from Brechin and Lana Midler from Carnoustie were out in the mini-stock and despite the conditions must have been happy with their afternoon's practice. The Micro F2s welcomed new faces from Charlotte Linsdale and Archie Nicol, but it was Harry Yule from Westmuir who was one of the fastest on the tracks. Despite being caught up in a shunt during one of his outings, Yule always on pace. A second practice session is taking place at Racewell before the season starts on the 8th of March. Arbroath in sore loss to title rivals. Arbroath co-manager David Gold believes his side got what we deserved in a 2-0 defeat away to title rivals Stenhouse Muir last Saturday. Gold was particularly annoyed that his side seemingly forgot that what they are good at and got drawn into playing the other team's game. It was an unchanged lineout from the side who performed so well at Queen of the South the week before. Arbroath made a bright start with both Aaron Steele and Andy Winter coming close to giving them an early lead. However, the home side started coming back into things with Blair Alston and Kinley Bilham having methods. The side rather cancelled each other out for much of the second period before the deadlock was finally broken in the 77th minute. 9 minutes of stoppage time were added to the game, mainly due to the referee going down with an injury. In the 97th minute, the hosts secured the 3 points when Gregor Buchanan found Ross Taylor at the back post to nod home. City now needing to go on with winning run. Brechin City boss Patrick Gregg has encouraged his side to go on a winning run, while there's also hoping they'll start taking more of their chances. More Highland League points were dropped last midweek as City drew 1-1 at home to Keith, meaning they haven't won at Glebe Park since early November. Ewan Loudon gave the host the lead after 20 minutes, but Brodie Alberts quick equalised on 72 minutes. Gregg boosted his squad ahead of the trip to Rothes on Saturday with the arrival of defender Kieran Sweeney from EOS Premier Division side Jeanfield Swifts. And lastly, Stuart needs to have a rethink. Montrose boss Stuart Petrie admits he didn't see it coming as his side lost 3-0 to home at Queen of the South last Saturday. Despite dominating the League One clash with 61% possession, the host would only have a single shot on goal across the entire 90 minutes. Despite not having as much of the ball, Queen of the South would prove much more ruthless as Adam Brooks gave them the lead from the penalty spot after 20 minutes. They could continue to have the better of the chances and added two further to the final 10 in the final 10 minutes through Henry Cochrane and another penalty this time scored by Fraser Bryden. This leaves Montrose sitting 3 points ahead of Annan Athletic and 5 points ahead of 9th place Inverness Caledonian Thistle as they head to the Highlands this Saturday.
Fiona here with the 6th of March edition of Angus County Press, giving you some news, reviews and sport. Planning for the future. Angus Council leader has said that the local authority's approved budget, which includes an 11% hike in council tax, will allow significant investment in the future of Angus. Councillor Bill Duff said that the plans, which were approved by 15 of the council's 25 members, will help the council to face continued challenges. It means a council tax hike of 11% for those living in the county. This equates to a £144.84 increase for those in Band D. The Conservative, oblique independent opposition group, put forward a 9.5% council tax increase, while two non-aligned councillors proposed a 9% council tax rise. The administration has pointed out, however, that despite the 11% increase, Angus Council tax rates remain among the lowest in Scotland. Speaking after the meeting, Mr. Duff said, "This was yet another challenging budget to balance, not least because of the additional pressure of the UK government's national insurance hike. We have listened to the public and protected our most vital frontline services. The council faces continued challenges ahead, not least improving local infrastructure and dealing with the increasingly damaging effects of climate change. Decisions we have taken to this budget mean that we are able to make significant investments in the future of Angus, and it is to that work we will now turn. Cash support for student carers. The National Student Money Week, March the 3rd to 7th, unpaid carers in education are being encouraged to check if they are entitled to financial help from Social Security Scotland. It is estimated that there are around 35,000 unpaid carers attending college or university in Scotland. The type of help they provide includes emotional, mental, or physical support for a family member, friend, or neighbour. But many fail to recognise themselves as a carer, which could mean they are missing out on extra money.
There are three payments from Social Security Scotland that could help student carers during their studies. Carer support payment replaces carer's allowance. Unlike carer's allowance, it is available to more carers in education. Young carer grant and carer's allowance supplement are only available in Scotland. Louise Reid from the National Association of Student Money Advisors said, students, alongside wider society, are consistently pushed to the limit financially from sources outside their control. The cost of housing, energy, and food have all been consistently high, and this hits students' carers particularly hard, as caring responsibilities can limit or completely reduce any capacity for part-time work to top up existing student funding. Additional financial resources are vital. Probus told of the influence of Angus on the history of golf. Carnoustie Probus president Alan Brown presided at the recent AGM, and after welcoming 21 members and dealing with essential business, he welcomed club secretary David Taylor as the speaker. His talk was entitled Early History of Golf and Its Subsequent Development from 1700s to Early 1930s. He started by referring to the evidence of the Dutch game of Kolf, C-O-L-F, or Kolf, K-O-L-F, but it was the Scots on the East Coast who introduced the hole in the ground, the vital factor which separates golf as we know it from every early club and ball game. He then spoke about early clubs and balls, the formation of the rules, and how the number of holes on courses became standardised at 18 for most courses. He then spoke of some of the early winners of the Open Championship, in particular the victories of old and young Tom Morris. 50K keeps Castle open. Broughty Ferry councillor Kevin Cordell has welcomed the £50,000 funding boost for Broughty Ferry Castle and Museum, allocated in Dundee City Council's budget. Leisure and Culture Dundee has been awarded the cash to support the historic site's operations, though this will come with some reduction in opening hours. However, Mr. Cordell welcomed the funding, which will help to keep the castle open during the summer season. It was revealed in a report to the Council's Governance Committee in December that LACD was recommending the castle's closure due to budgetary constraints. Donation after charity talk. Members of the East, Auld and Inverarity Guild recently welcomed Speaker Rebecca Duncan to their meeting, who spoke about her work with the Archie Foundation. Anne Watt led devotions on the theme of Suffer the Little Children to Come Unto Me and introduced Rebecca, who presented an engaging and inspiring visual talk about the charity in the northeast of Scotland. Rebecca outlined her earlier career, including development officer for 12 years with Dundee Science Centre, and her own struggles through serious illness during and after her own second child's birth. Archie was founded in 2000 to support funding a new Royal Aberdeen Children's Hospital, then growing to encompass care for local sick children across Grampian, Highland and Tayside. Their simple mission, to provide much needed extras for babies and under 18s not already catered for by the financially stretched NHS. Annual supermarket sweep in aid of CHAS. Aldi Scotland has announced children's hospices across Scotland, CHAS, as the official charity partner of its long-running and hugely popular supermarket sweep initiative for 2025. The charity will be the event's exclusive beneficiary, with funds raised helping to provide vital hospice care and support to children with life-shortening conditions across Scotland. Launched in 2016, the Supermarket Challenge offers shoppers the chance to take part in a 5-minute trolley dash, allowing them to gather as many Aldi favourites as they can. Once the time is up, the lucky shopper takes home the trolley full of goodies, while Aldi matches the cash value of the goods as a donation. Each year across Scotland, CHAS supports more than 500 babies, children and young people with life-shortening conditions and their families. All funds raised will go directly to CHAS, with £10,000 pledged in support. Whisky expert is New Distillery's master blender. A renowned whisky expert has joined Angus's newest distillery as its master blender. Ron Welsh will take up the position with Bothy Trading, whose Bothy distillery is poised to begin production in the spring. The company is also behind acclaimed Scottish brand Gin Bothy. Its new distillery in Glenprozen, expected to produce 300 casks annually on site, will be one of Scotland's most remote, with over three decades working with distilleries including Laphroaig, Beaumont, Auchentoshan and Ardmore. Mr. Welsh developed a global reputation as a true master of the craft. His expertise will guide the distillery in cask selection and maturation, and over the next 5 years, he will curate a selection of limited cask releases in preparation for the Glenprozen single malt, the first legal distilling in the Glen for over a century. Bothy founder Kim Cameron added, "Ron joining us as master blender is amazing for the Bothy distillery. We've always had a vision of creating whisky that captures the spirit of Scotland, its land, history and people." Now some sport items. Sandy's ready for eighth season in the British GT. Forfa driver Sandy Mitchell will return to the British GT Championship this season for an eighth successive year. The 2020 champion narrowly missed out on a second title last year by just 5 points, despite winning more races with his teammate Alex Martin than any other driver. The 24-year-old will again partner with the Englishman in the number 78 Lamborghini Huracan GT3 EVO2, prepared by Barwell Motorsport. However, changes out with his control mean Mitchell will be competing at just 4 of the 7 race weekends, with Finnish driver and former Barwell teammate Patrick Kujala stepping in for the remaining 3. Mitchell will partner Martin at the opening 2-hour race at Donington on the first weekend in April. Mitchell, who was rewarded for his dazzling performances in 2024 with the coveted Alan Simonson Award, said, "I'm really happy to be back in British GT this year with Barwell and Alex." Making sport more inclusive in Angus. Angus Alive is aiming to make sports more inclusive for members of the LGBTQ community, with staff training and dedicated sessions at its local facilities. And following the success of the introduction of pickleball at the county sports centres, sessions for the LGBTQ community have been launched at Arbroath Saltire Sports Centre. The sessions have been set up so that anyone who feels excluded or fears discrimination due to their sexual orientation or gender identity have a safe environment in which to enjoy the sport, the fastest growing in the world, with like-minded people. Chairman calls for fans to get behind the team. Forfar Athletic Chairman Scott Murdy has urged fans to turn Station Park into a venue away teams will not relish visiting as they fight for survival. Athletic remain bottom of League Two at present, but Murdy believes they are starting to see an uptick in fortunes under Jim Weir. In a statement on the club's website, he wrote, "There is no question that our situation in League Two got worse before it has started to improve somewhat, following a more recent upturn in our results. The home reversals against both Stranraer and Edinburgh City, coupled with the other teams closest to us picking up points, had the club in particularly difficult position. We fully understand the frustrations that this leads to amongst our supporters. That said, the performances and results at Bonnyrigg and Spartans has begun to reduce the gap on the teams above us. This will hopefully give some cause for cautious optimism and renewed hope. Now is the time when we all need to dig deep and give Jim and the players our unwavering and vocal backing. I would urge you all to continue to get fully behind Jim and the team in every match between now and the end of the season.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello and welcome to your regular quiz section. My name is Anne and I have five short questions for you. I hope you're ready, and let's begin with quiz number 30. And question one is, in which country was Elon Musk born? Question two, which country has the most islands? Question three, how many hearts does an octopus have? Question four, December the 26th is known as what in Ireland? And question five, which planet is closest to the sun? And that's all for this quiz. I'll speak to you again soon when I bring you the answers. Hello again. This is Anne with your regular quiz section, and I have the answers to quiz number 30. And the first question was, in which country was Elon Musk born? Elon Musk was born in South Africa. Question two was, which country has the most islands? Well, that's Sweden, and it has 270,000 islands. Question three was, how many hearts does an octopus have? An octopus has three hearts. Question four, December the 26th is known as what in Ireland? Well, it's known as St. Stephen's Day. And question five was, what planet is closest to the sun? And that's Mercury. And that's all for this time. I'll speak to you again soon when I bring you the next quiz.
TNF Soundings. TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Nikki with a tale from Fiona about the history of guide dogs. It's been over 90 years since the UK's first ever guide dogs completed their training. Two amazing British pioneers, Muriel Crook and Rosamund Bond, organised the training of the first four British guide dogs from a humble lock-up garage in Wolseley, Merseyside, in 1931. German Shepherds Flash, Folly, Judy and Mita, which means pearl in German, led the way. Since then, the Guide Dogs for the Blind Association, known colloquially as Guide Dogs, now based in Leamington Spa, has evolved to be the world's largest breeder and trainer of working dogs. With dedicated staff, volunteers and vital donations, 36,000 lives have been transformed through a guide dog partnership. The history of guide dogs is a long one, and there are many intriguing stories to enjoy. According to the International Guide Dogs Federation's website, for instance, perhaps the earliest recorded example of a dog leading a blind person is depicted in a 1st century AD mural in the buried ruins of Roman Herculaneum. However, the first known attempt to train guide dogs happened at a hospital for the blind in Paris in 1780. So successful was this training that shortly afterwards, in 1788, Joseph Riesinger, a blind sieve maker from Vienna, trained a Spitz so well that people often questioned whether he was blind. Coming right up to date, trainee guide dogs are being put through their paces as trainers come up with more ideas to help the pups cope with modern life. Now, bearded and tattooed volunteers are helping to socialise the next generation of guide dogs. This followed research which revealed 1 in 5 dog owners said their dogs have shown signs of fear or confusion when encountering unfamiliar physical attributes, such as beards, facial piercings, tattoos, and unconventional hairstyles. To help ensure guide dogs are acclimatised to the varied world they will encounter, Guide Dogs is looking to find new puppy raisers with a particular call-out to people with distinctive characteristics, from beards and brightly coloured mohawks to facial piercings and tattoos. In October last year, the charity tested the resolve of a group of 12 trainee guide dogs when they visited Warwick Castle's Halloween Trail as a way to prepare them for remaining calm in unusual environments where the unexpected may happen, along with the occasional loud noise. The attraction toned down the normal level of boos, bogeymen and bumps in the night as the puppies took the next step towards their working lives. Meanwhile, in Hull, 5 puppies have been learning to make a splash in the world as they train to become guide dogs. The trainees, Elkie, Odin, Mitch, Shannon and Cooper, have been testing their resolve at an aquarium called The Deep, as they learn how to navigate dark tunnels and adapt and respond to various social settings, including unfamiliar creatures. Guide Dog said the aquarium school trip for the pups was part of their training to make them more resilient to different environments. In 2024, Guide Dogs announced that sadly it was to make about 160 people redundant, around 9% of its workforce, to prevent an estimated £20 million funding gap opening up by 2026. The charity blamed COVID and the cost of living crisis. Veterinary bills had increased by almost 20% and pet food bills by 12% since 2023, with further increases expected, they explained. Our fixed costs have increased considerably over the past few years, and our fundraising income has plateaued due to the external economic challenges, said Chief Executive Officer Andrew Lennox. It is impossible to underestimate the importance and the value of guide dogs and the huge life-changing impacts they have on their visually impaired owners. Indeed, their skills can be life-saving. Literally life-saving in the case of Salty and Roselle, 2 guide dogs who were with their owners in the World Trade Center during the September 11 attacks in New York City in 2001. They each guided their owners, Michael Hingson and Omar Rivera, out of the burning towers before the buildings collapsed, feats which were later recognised when they were awarded the Dickin Medal by the British charity The People's Dispensary for Sick Animals. Their citation read, "For remaining loyally at the side of their blind owners, courageously leading them down more than 70 floors of the World Trade Center and to a place of safety following the terrorist attack on New York on September 11, 2001. Roselle went on to be posthumously named American Hero Dog of the Year 2011 by American Humane shortly after her death, age 13, and has had a book written about her. But back to today and the UK, where the need for guide dogs is not diminishing, so guide dogs need support to be able to continue their life-changing work. As a charity explains on its website, every hour another person in the UK goes blind. 180,000 people with sight loss rarely leave home alone. Almost 2 million people in the UK are living with sight loss now, but by 2050, there could be nearly 4 million.
DNF Soundings.